The beauty is indeed, in this scenario, finally overwhelmed by punishing ugliness. And same with all the other things in the list we experience that are beautiful in their time. Since we don't know where this world is going and how this story will turn out, all you can know is things like these. You plant and work hard to plant, only to need to uproot what you've planted. You love, only in the end to hate the fact that you love so much because love hurts for no reason. You weep, but your weeping is in vain. It's a vain exercise in missing the point because tears at the end of the day are but sentimental drops of salty water that will merely be washed away with the ocean tide of time, just like you. And all the emotions that you once thought were so meaningful, real, that they actually meant something. This realistic appraisal of the world was championed by Friedrich Nietzsche. It's an approach that takes what we know for sure, namely, we live and then we die, and philosophizes backwards from there. It's not happy, but it is brutally honest. And if we're going to be wise, we better be honest about the world that we live in, according to Coëlette. And the question that bubbles up is, how should we respond to this situation? Coëlette, in the rest of our text, is going to outline four possible responses. And let me just profile them before discussing them further. In response to the situation of ugliness that seems to overshadow the beauty, we can be crushed by it, or ignore it, or see in our mind's eye and with faith a deeper beauty even beneath the deeper ugliness. Or finally, fourthly, we can see with our heart's perception and with faith the deepest possible beauty that is hinted at, according to Coëlette, in all of the ugliness. Let's take each of these options one at a time. First, as implied in verse 10, we can simply be crushed by the reality of our situation and conclude once again, as Coëlette does throughout the book, in looking at the human predicament on earth, that life is chavel. It's like Abel's life. By the way, that's exactly the same word for Abel, chavel. It's fleeting. It can appear to be meaningless. It can appear to be absurd. It's simply a crushing burden to be here as the fantastically limited creatures that we are, whose hearts cry out for the moon like they do, but for naught. So much beauty. Incredible. In the midst of so much ugliness. And yet it's wiped away and doesn't mean a Reese's peanut butter cup, insofar as we can tell. In this scenario, the beauty, all of the beauty, indeed becomes ugly, and we become properly cantankerous, grumpy, like Friedrich Nietzsche, who found life so intolerable that he took his own life. But that's not the only way to respond, thanks be to God. Another way, a second way, pretty popular in our own day, we might recognize, is to respond simply by trying to make the best of it. It's verses 12 through 13, a posture we might call the carpe diem or seize the day posture, which just kind of ignores the dilemma or decides to put it to the side completely because we can't do anything about it. Yeah, life may be confounding, this perspective says, and it doesn't end well, but don't worry about it, and instead just know this. There is beauty, there is pleasure, there is delight in all things, and, quote, there is nothing better to do than to be happy and do good while you live. Eat, drink, find satisfaction in your work. Or in other words, stop looking up and out to the future, human being, with eternity in your heart. And simply keep your head down and focus on the positive and good available in each and every moment that you have breath to breathe. Be more like an animal who isn't afflicted with consciousness as we are and thinks about the future, but simply live each day for what it is in the now. To be able to do this, as Coëlette will say, is indeed, from a common grace perspective, the gift of God. It is, because it is at least better than being cantankerous, and it can make you thankful, and that's a good thing. You become a pleasant person to be around. Incidentally, my grade 7 grad song encouraged us into exactly this posture of life. You know what our grade 7 grad song was? It perfectly captures the sentiment of this posture. Any guesses? What is it?
Here's a little song I wrote. I'm going to play it note for note, but don't worry. I'm be happy.
Oh, what's the next line? Hold on.
In every life we have some trouble, but if you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy.
It perfectly captures the sentiment of this posture. And it's not a bad way to live, but it's not the best way. Yet a better way, a third way, suggests Coalette, is to see with your mind, as you think further, and it's a cognitive exercise here, that there is potentially a deeper beauty underneath the ugliness of death that can give us a meaning beyond the ugliness. It's verses 14 and 15. Notice he says, I know, it's a cognitive exercise, I know that everything God does will endure forever, nothing added, nothing taken. God does it so that people will fear him. Whatever is has already been, what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. Again, it's a riddle. Now, what is Coalette saying here? Well, I think he's saying, look again at the world, human being. From your own experience, look at the world. Look hard. Things pass away and are fleeting, that's true, and that makes everything look ugly, certainly. But there's another truth to be seen in the world, an arguably deeper truth than the ugliness. And this truth, too, is available to human perception. And that is that there is incredibly beautiful structure here in this world, and orderliness and regularity that doesn't pass away. And the beauty and the pleasure and delight actually comes from those deeper fundamental structures. And when you think about that hard for a while, it seems to indicate something, a sort of reasonable faith you might have. It seems to indicate that, you know, if there's a structure, then there might be a builder. If there is such solid order, then maybe, just maybe, there's an organizer. If there is such enduring regularity, maybe there's an enduring designer. And maybe then, despite the furious reality of death, this designer, so solid in originally constructing this world so beautifully as he has, can be trusted. As he says, God does this so that human beings will fear him. And maybe this designer can be trusted because, just as we human beings have these strange longings in our hearts to recover things that have been lost, the beautiful things, maybe the designer has a heart too, precisely to recover what's been lost. That sentiment comes at the end of verse 15, though again the translation makes it hard to see. In the Hebrew, the end of verse 15 literally reads, and God seeks what has been driven away. Not God will call the past to account, but God seeks what has been driven away. Now, to have this faith, beloved of God, to see this sort of deeper beauty underneath the ugliness of death, that there might be a God in this world who created the world in the first place and who seeks to recover what was lost or has been driven away. Well, this is to have a good and hopeful faith. And this posture, Coalette says, just on the basis of looking at the world, is available to us. It is a reasonable faith to be had. But there is yet another way, a fourth way, that combines and dovetails with this third way, and that, taken together with this third option, is arguably the best option there is. Because better than cynicism, and better than simply living for the moment, and better than a rather generic faith that reasons itself from the stable structures of creation into a hope beyond death, better than all of these is to look down deeply, Coalette says, into your very own heart. Look down to the seat of your deepest hopes, your deepest fears, and see that the deepest desires you have, human being, the very things that you're most profoundly moved by and motivated by, are also the deepest truths of human experience. And therefore, quite reasonably, the most profound indicators of what is true about this world. and what must somehow in some way happen in the future. Verses 16 and 17. I saw something else under the sun, and the place of judgment, wickedness was there, and the place of justice, wickedness was there. I said to myself, and the Hebrew here is, I said in my heart, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, and the word there again is not activity, but delight and pleasure, a time to judge every deed. Not only will there be a time to experience delight and pleasure and beauty in all the other things mentioned in verses 2 through 8, says Qohelet, but if you look down into your heart deep enough, you will see that there must somehow also be a time for another delight and another pleasure, and namely, that pleasure of a final totalizing judgment of the righteous and the wicked. What on earth is Qohelet talking about here? Well, to put it briefly, and to try to avoid losing us by unpacking these verses too technically, I believe that what Qohelet is essentially saying here is what Blaise Pascal once said. Pascal said this: the heart knows reasons of which reason knows nothing. The heart knows reasons of which reason knows nothing. Within the context of our present observations about time, Qohelet's observations, we might say this: yes, there is beauty in this world, and yes, there is ugliness, and yes, the ugliness of death by all appearances right now gets the last word. But what if it's true that we're really not seeing the whole picture with our brains, but that despite this, the whole picture lives in us emotionally like an ache, like a homesickness, and we can trust that homesick feeling within us? I think this is exactly what Qohelet is getting on in verses 16 and 17. When he turns from looking at things with his mind, which is good, to look at things from the perspective of what's going on in his heart. For example, friends, why do we notice injustice at all? Is it perhaps, maybe just maybe, because we have a deep memory somewhere within us that this world never should have been this way? Why do we recognize wickedness at all and differentiate it from other kinds of things? Could it be perhaps, and again, because although we don't see the beginning from the end, that's true, nonetheless, the beginning and the end have been placed like a miracle growth in our hearts and placed there in the form of a curiously exciting sense that we are eternal creatures destined for so much more than this? And doesn't all of this swirling in our hearts really point to something? And maybe that something is that the future is sure. A final judgment will come, and then after that, all things will be made new. To see this possibility as true, beloved of God, and hold it in faith, is to see and enter into the deepest beautiful in ugly. And it is to rise up in hope. We may not see the whole picture with our eyes, that's true. And death is a great enemy, that's true too. But that doesn't mean that a whole picture doesn't exist and exist firmly beyond death. The ugly we see may simply be an indication of a stunning and supreme beauty we do not see. And look, isn't there evidence for this in the world already? Doesn't this actually happen to us already? Sue Contant brought an image as we were reflecting on the visuals for this series of a ballerina's bruised and ugly foot, but it was a picture that just focused in on that ugly foot. We may see an ugly beat up foot, but what if we see the ballerina attached to it, and that the foot is bruised and ugly precisely because she is offering something incredibly beautiful? We may see a barren field, but what happens when we see that barren field overcome with color because death has given birth to new life? We may see a cross on a hill, and we may conclude with many at that time that he was another failure, another failed Jewish hopeful Messiah. But what if we look further at a bigger picture and see that on the third day? Do our hearts not tell us this is true? That it must be true. Can we not take this niggling unflagging sense within us as the Spirit of God confirming to us what we can't know, but we can trust is true. I believe so. There is a deeper beauty in the ugliness of this world, beloved of God, always poking its head trying to get out. And our hearts know it. And we can cling to that. Chances are, however, it will cling to us first, because such is the love of God as it is moving in our world, always and ever toward us. This is how Christian Wyman became a Christian, and I'll conclude with this story. But it encapsulates so much of what I think is going on in Ecclesiastes 3. Christian Wyman is an intellectual who lives in New York City. He's a poet and a writer and an editor. Christian Wyman never felt at home in his own life, and like many of us, found it profoundly difficult to be at ease in this world. A deep existential angst clung to him always. It's not that he didn't believe in God, he says. It's not even that he was particularly indifferent to God. It's just that God felt so unspeakably absent. The color ran away from Christian's life. Everything felt black and white and gray. He found it hard to write poetry of any sort anymore. And then two things happened in Christian's life that awakened him to a whole new way of experiencing the world and to a whole new hope in God. The first was an experience of beauty and all the pleasure and delight that beauty brings. In his case, he fell in love. An experience he describes as a radical intrusion and transformation. The sense I had was of color slowly aching into things. The world coming brilliantly, abradingly alive. I remember sunlight suddenly more itself on an empty plate, a piece of silver. The lake booming its blue into everything. I was completely consumed and did some daffy things. But it also felt for the first time in my life like I was being fully possessed by being itself. And as many of us have experienced, that is what beauty, and especially the beauty of falling in love, perhaps can do. It can awaken us to the world around us, to a sense of the divine, the God-kissed nature of everything. The second thing, though, that happened to Christian, only after 1 year of being married, was that he was diagnosed with an extremely rare blood disease, a disease that always takes the life of those who get this disease. But you didn't know when. Could have been a week, a month, or it could be several years. Christian and his wife cried together a lot, and he says, what we were mourning was not my death exactly, but the death of the life we had imagined with each other. But paradoxically, what Christian experiences in all of this beauty mashed together with all of this ugliness is a deeper beauty in the ugliness, the deepest beauty of all. He says, then one morning we found ourselves going to church, found ourselves. That's exactly what it felt like in both senses of the phrase. As if some impulse in each of us had finally been catalyzed into action, so that we were casting aside the Sunday paper and moving toward the door with barely a word between us. And as if, once inside the church, we were discovering exactly where and who we were meant to be. And then he continues, I was brought up with the poisonous notion that you had to renounce love of the earth in order to receive the love of God. My experience has been just the opposite. A love of the earth and existence so overflowing that it implied or included or even absolutely demanded God. Love did not deliver me from the earth but into it. And by some miracle, I do not find that this experience is crushed or even lessened by the knowledge that in all likelihood, I will be leaving the earth sooner than I had thought. Quite the contrary, I find life thriving in me and not in an anesthetizing death is the mother of beauty sort of way either. For what extreme grief has given me is the very thing it seemed at first to obliterate, a sense of life beyond the moment, a sense of hope. One wonders if Christian Wyman was reading Ecclesiastes 3 before he penned these words. But maybe the truth of the matter is that Ecclesiastes 3 was living in him just as it lives in each one of us and those in our world. May God lead us in his love to the beautiful side of ugly. To faith in him. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.